Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hello and welcome back to season two of the Prepoint Pod. It's great to be back. We're starting this season with a very special guest, Georgia Dostal. And Georgia is best known as the Balance Ballerina. She hosts her own podcast, the Balance Ballerinas Podcast, and has been teaching for over 10 years. You can find Georgia at GC Dance on the Gold Coast. I really hope you enjoy this episode. Hello, Georgia. Thank you so much for coming on to the Prepoint Pod. It's a pleasure to have you. I would like to ask firstly, though, what is it like to be on the other side of the interview?
It's actually quite relaxing, really. And I'm going to try and do my best, Louise, to not like take over and start interviewing you again. So just keep me on track, okay?
I'll try. So, yeah, first question I have, tell our audience, if they don't know you already, about all the feathers that you've got in your cap.
Okay, where do I begin? So, I mean, I started ballet when I was 3 years old and I fell in love instantly. I remember my mum taking me to a performance and I was, you know, really enjoying it, but I just wanted to be up there on stage. After that, we moved to Queensland and I just kept, you know, the most important thing to me was finding a dance school. And I was very angry at mum for taking too long at finding another ballet school. And I stayed at that ballet school for quite a long time until I decided to do some full-time training. So I went down to the Australian Ballet School, did all of that. And then I sort of said to myself, I don't know if like a professional life as a ballerina is for me. So I actually gave it all up. I ended up, when I was down at the Aussie Ballet, sort of disappearing, I guess, from some of the more leisurely classes to go to Melbourne Uni and sit in on the back of lectures. And I really, it's like, it's almost like, because I never had that sort of like normalcy, I wanted to be like a normie in quotation marks and go and see what academic life or like school life was like, because, you know, being a student was such a foreign concept for like a pre-professional ballerina. And my mum was like, this is ridiculous. You need to come home. And so anyway, so I ended up going to uni and a lot of people think that I studied dance, but I didn't. I studied a Bachelor of Communications, which I'll be honest, is the best thing I ever did, because a Bachelor of Communications has helped me so much with running my businesses. And I think sometimes a lot of people open studios without a business background. So I already had that, you know, inkling that I wanted to run a business. And I actually wasn't even sure that it was going to be in the dance industry. But whilst I was at uni, I started having people ask me to teach. And I thought, oh, well, it's better pay than working at a bar or in retail. Mind you, I ended up in a retail job as well. I loved working, so I worked so much. But when I was teaching, I sort of fell back in love with ballet. And I kind of thought to myself when I was teaching at all these studios, I think I can do a good job of this. So when I finished uni, it's funny, Louise, I remember going into our careers counsellor at University of Queensland and he was like, so where to from here? And I was like, you know what, I'm actually not really needing your assistance. This is my business plan and I'm going to open a dance studio. And he just laughed and thought it was so random. And the next thing I did was give my business plan to my parents, and they actually turned me back the first time. Not because I was asking for money or anything, but because they actually didn't want me to live that entrepreneurial lifestyle. They wanted me to sort of go out into the workforce. And so I did. I ended up getting a really random job in a brewery. I loved doing the marketing for them. I drank lots of beer and lived a great normal life for a little bit. And then I said to them, no, I'm sorry, I fine-tuned my business plan. This is what I want to do. And so we made it happen, which I was really fortunate. And the location I was in and the studio I opened was GC Dance. And we were in that same location for 10 years. Mm. Recently, we moved to our beautiful new location. And during that,
lovely. Yeah.
I love our new studio. We worked very hard for it. I'm still working very hard for it. But basically, the reason we changed locations was because I really developed a huge adult ballet program. So we needed a space that was, you know, I wanted it to feel mature and luxurious and like a fancy yoga studio, you know, not like a place that three-year-olds come to twirl and, you know, swing their little fairy wands around. Mind you, we have lots of that going on too, but I wanted it to feel really like luxe. And so now we have a really big, even bigger adult ballet program and our school-aged kids, GC Dance, but the adults are under the banner Balanced Ballerinas. And under that banner, gosh, what is there? Workshops, podcasts, online courses. Have I missed anything? Blog, you name it. It's like my creative space. Yeah.
Yeah.
Is that enough? Have I given you the nutshell?
Yeah, I think it's great. And obviously, you mentioned the podcast, so Balanced Ballerinas podcast, which I have to say has been a good inspiration for me with the Prepoint Pod. So I guess listening to some earlier episodes versus some more recent episodes, like how has it grown and changed? Have you noticed it growing and changing over the years?
Yeah, so I have to admit, I actually feel like I'm at a little bit of a crossroads with the podcast. I absolutely love it, but as you know, it actually takes a lot of time to sort of, whether it's the organizing of a guest, that takes a lot of time, finding a time, especially if they're international, that suits both of you. Trying to organize even what guests you want on, you know, you want them to align with your brand and your philosophy, you know, as much as possible. And then just the editing and uploading, and I don't even do that many edits. And then if you've got someone wanting to sponsor an episode, you have to, you know, it's great. I've had it happen a couple of times. But the problem with the sponsorship is that you then have to send off, you know, drafts of what you're going to say and get them to approve what you're going to, you know. So it's really lovely, but then that's a whole nother full-time business too. So yeah. I think in the beginning, almost every episode was interview-based with a guest. And then I did a couple of solo eps and they actually had a lot of listens, sometimes more so. Mm. So I sort of then started mixing up between guests and solo episodes. And I think they sort of went for quite a long time, like, you know, over an hour. And I just find now with a baby coming along, I want to keep the podcast going. I don't want to be that person that just disappears when they have a baby. Like, it's not in my nature anyway, but I'm just trying to work out how I can keep the high vibes of the podcast going and the Balanced Ballerinas philosophy and get some interesting guests, but also try and streamline it in a way that it can sort of run a bit more like clockwork. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. So it's interesting. Yeah. I mean, it seems like something that's so easy to do and it's such a flexible thing, but you're right. Like it does take a lot of organization. And yeah, you really have to sort of think about the message that you want, or I guess if you're inviting somebody on, you want to know where it's going to go and what the point of the talk will be sometimes. Yeah. Yeah.
Having said that, there's been some lovely conversations where I thought it was going to go somewhere and it went somewhere completely differently, which is always really lovely. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So I guess, can we balance the Balanced Ballerina podcast? That's kind of a good question.
That is so the question. And I think longtime listeners will have noticed, and I've even said in a few of the solo eps that episodes might get a bit shorter. But I think with people's attention spans, that's not the worst thing in the world anyway.
Yeah, it's good to have a combination, I think. Yeah.
Yeah.
So one of the things you do discuss, though, which I'm very impressed about and actually so grateful that there is a platform like that for dancers, but you talk about a lot of health issues. So I guess I'm interested to know why that is so important to you as a dance teacher and a dancer.
I've actually been really interested in health and wellness before wellness was even a word, you know. Yeah. I've always been really interested about what I put in my body, and especially when I left the Australian Ballet School, I started really, it's funny, and this shouldn't have been the inspiration for it, but I remember when I left full-time training, people said to me, oh, you know, at maybe a family barbecue, having some birthday cake, oh, be careful, you're not full-time dancing anymore, it'll just go straight to your hips, you know. So after a few funny comments, I thought to myself, you know, oh, maybe I should really, you know, just not necessarily watch what I eat, but what am I eating, and just be really mindful of that, and started to really fuel my body. And I guess that's where it started, that sort of notion of looking at my, what I put into my body as fuel, which is funny because I should have been doing that back when I was a full-time dance student.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not had such a bad, you know, reason for the inspiration. And so I think, that was probably the first part. The second part was I have really sensitive skin and I've suffered from eczema my whole life. And it wasn't until in my early 20s I met a skin specialist, Dr. Pete Smith, and he sat me down and he actually said, you can clear this. It's just what you're eating. So he made me do a meal diary and he just like cut all this stuff out, but more importantly, added lots of stuff. Yeah. So this is where I started learning about avocados and good oils and nuts and seeds, and then some really random foods that I really shouldn't be having for eczema. Something as simple as gum. It's got full of salicylates. And so Right. Eating gum, really bad if you have eczema, and little bits and pieces like that. And so that's when I really went down that path. But I think one of the reasons why for me health is such an important topic alongside ballet on the podcast is because I don't know how to teach or live any other way, because as a dancer, your body is your tool and you got to look after it, and you have to, you know, it's all intrinsically linked. So I don't know how to not talk about it, if that makes sense.
Yeah, perfect sense. I think that's a really good way to explain the way that your interest developed and I guess your passion for continuing that. I really like the way that you also advocate for ballet as a health tool, because it is a form of physical activity. And so interestingly, I've been having a look at a few sort of reports and things through my research as well, and finding like the Ausplay reports, which are basically reports, and they just research different physical activities that kids do under the age of 15, for example, and then do they continue those into adulthood? Yeah. You know, because it's a public health question, really. But one of the things that surprised me most was that ballet and dance was the fourth most popular physical activity for kids under the age of 15. But then that drops off as they get older.
Yeah.
And health and poor health and injury are one of the most common reasons why that happens as well. But like, I guess I'm super interested in Balanced Ballerinas and the concept of adult ballet. I love the way that you're so supportive of integrating ballet into a healthy lifestyle as a form of exercise, because it's something that I think Australian society skimps out on a lot. Yeah. So yeah. Where have you always done ballet classes for adults, or is that something that has sort of come along after an epiphany or a moment of
So it wasn't really an epiphany. It wasn't really a moment. I can't even take full credit for it, if I'm honest. I can now, but you know, back then, the reason we started adult ballet, in all honesty, is because my dad said, you, at the time when I first opened my studio, I only had about 50, 60 students. Now we've got like over 200, but school-age students. And he said to me, look, Georgia, you know, my parents are very entrepreneurial. They've always kept me on track. My mom is now my business partner. She does all our book work. That is not a strong suit. And numbers is not my thing. And they sat me down. They went, Georgia, you need to work out, you know, we're just the numbers people. You need to work out how to fill the studio space either during the day or later at night, or get some more revenue in the building. And we had a mum of one of my students say, I would love to do some ballet. And then I had someone ask me for adult ballet classes because they were auditioning for a musical and they said they needed some ballet training. And I thought, oh, maybe there's something here. And so I went away and I said, hey, Dad, I think I've got a good way to do this. I'm going to do some adult ballet classes. And I don't know, I think he was sort of like, oh, don't think so. Maybe you should just hire the place for some yoga, you know. and I tried that too as well. So I tried to hire the space for some yoga classes. And anyway, what stuck was I started a Monday night adult ballet class. And the first time, the first class we had, I think maybe... maybe 10 people show up. Like, it was pretty good.
Yeah.
The next week I had like 25, 30 people show up and I thought, oh my gosh, I'm onto something, but I also need to quickly work out a booking system. So, so I figured out the booking system and then I added another class. And so I added a Tuesday morning class. So originally ballet was only Monday nights and Tuesday mornings, adult ballet. Nowadays we have, oh my gosh, 2, 4, 6, 8. We have about 10 adult ballet classes, if not a couple more. So considering we have a full timetable for our school age students, that's all we can manage to fit in. And we could probably put some more in if we could, but we can't. We simply can't fit them in. But the adult ballet now has been running over a decade. And, you know, it's been a slow burn. Whilst it may look really fast and really successful on the outside now, there were times where I had, you know, an advanced ballet class with only 3 people in it for 6 months. But I think the consistency of like letting my clients know, I'm not going anywhere. I'm going to run this class for you no matter what. I did that for so many years. And I think that persistence has paid off now. So, yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, it's great. I think obviously your dance school's located on the Gold Coast as well, which is a city, but it's not a major metropolitan city in Brisbane or Melbourne or Sydney. So I guess I've spoken to a few teachers, especially growing up on the Northern Rivers of New South Wales, and they've tried to get adult classes going, and it is just hard to have consistent students. So the fact that it's going, you know, 10 years running strong is pretty good.
And I think always my question back at people, because I get this all the time, Georgia, how do you get, you know, your students' consistency? And I'll be honest, yes, there are some students that are very consistent, but also they're adults. So some of them, like I've got a client that's really consistent, but she's currently on holidays for 4 weeks in Thailand. That's almost half our term. My question back at people trying to create consistent adult ballet classes and complaining that their students aren't consistent, are you consistent? Because I never take a sick day, and I don't necessarily think that that's a healthy thing. Like, I feel like there should be some balance. There should be a backup person that can take over for you. But 99% of the time, I am they're ready for their class and I don't cancel last minute. And I think when you provide that consistency on a long-term basis, you then it's reciprocated. But it's also really important to like let people know how amazing doing adult ballet or dance is. Like, you're talking about the stats and figures and research before, and during my I'm studying this year my diploma with the Royal Academy of Dance, and there's been some really interesting research that I've come across that, you know, and I think it's important to share that. Like, I was just looking at my notes before I wrote this down, literally yesterday, that the role of exercise in reducing risk of many conditions, including cardiovascular disease, stroke, hypertension, type 2 diabetes, osteoporosis, that's a big one, obesity, cancer, anxiety, depression, and just in general improves students' adults' balance. You have to demonstrate that within your community and get that message out there. So, and I think when you do that and you show up and commit to that, you'll have people showing up, you know, at your door.
Yeah, and that is an important point about consistency too. I think a lot of ballet schools operate on a school term, but I guess a lot of adults don't necessarily operate on a school term.
No, they don't.
it might just be that, you know, during school holidays is a time when they can actually go to a ballet class. So to have it inconsistent, yeah, that's a really good point.
Mind you, though, I do take school holidays off. I find with my adult students, they hate it when the school holidays roll around, but it's actually nice because I tell them it gives you a chance to miss me and to miss ballet and see that your body gets a little bit stiff and see that your body gets a little bit sad from missing it, and then you come back and you're, like, ready to go again.
Yeah, and I note too now, people can book in for one-on-one coaching with you online as well. So I guess it makes you even more accessible in many ways.
Yes. So the online space is interesting. I probably run my online course a little bit differently to other online courses or Zoom classes. I don't do Zoom classes. I get that message all the time. I don't necessarily enjoy teaching Zoom classes, and I kept being asked by balanced ballerinas around the world, because it really is, like, which is just blows my mind every time I say it. It's like a worldwide community now. And they'd go, well, I can't come to the Gold Coast and do a class. And so I developed the online course that it was on demand, because adults need to do something in their own time. And the most important thing was that it was going to be super safe to do at home. So really safe to do at home, because there's things that I truly believe we should not be doing at home without a proper flooring, and you'd agree with that as being a physio.
And also concrete. Having experience running into the coffee table quite a few times myself.
exactly. So it was really important to me to create a course that was really accessible, didn't need too much more equipment, and was really safe to do at home. And so they book in, if they do my 12-week course, they do their one-on-ones as more of a check-in. It's actually more of a, how are you going with the content? This little check-in keeps you motivated, and we usually discuss some topics that come up. Yeah.
Yeah, that's great. I've got some other questions. So I guess moving on from that, so you've been teaching for over 10 years now. And I listened to an episode actually of your podcast, and it was about giving corrections, which I'm really interested in, because as a physio, obviously I have to give corrections when people are doing exercises as well. And the take home message was, it's the wording that counts, which I do agree with as well. And I guess when you're criticizing or critiquing or offering, you know, even if it's constructive criticism, I guess I'm always very careful about how I'm saying things and what I'm saying and the tone and the intention and things like that. One thing that I did sort of think was, how do you coach things that you're not very good at? Because it can be quite hard. I mean, it's when you're good at doing things or you understand things really well, you can explain them to people better, right? But, like, for example, if I were trying to teach somebody how to do a pirouette, I was never very good at pirouettes. I feel like my advice is totally invalid. How do you approach that in your teaching? Is there a way that you get around that?
I think that part is really a collaborative kind of process. So not only am I trying to work out, okay, like, for example, I love jumping. I love Allegro. You know, that was always my thing. My teachers were like, how are you jumping so high, Skippy? Like, I had a coach that used to call me Skippy. And I don't know how to explain it. Do you know what I mean? So when a student in the past was like, oh, well, how can I jump that high? I had to break that down and work out, you know, the mechanics of how I jumped. And I think for things that you're not necessarily fabulous at, the same process applies. But see, I actually think because, say, for example, pirouettes, I'm a bit similar to you in that regard, is that that naturally didn't come to me. I had to work really hard at it. And I actually think you're better off teaching the things that you're bad at because you had to work at it, whereas the things that you're really good at, I think they're harder to teach because it just came naturally to you.
Yeah, maybe. So,
yeah, but for both, for either or, you have to break down the mechanics of it. Do you know what I mean? And sort of, especially with things where you're not necessarily good at, you have to go back to the drawing board and go, okay, what's out there resources wise? Okay, a great one. I look at PBT, Marie's Progressing Ballet Technique exercises. That usually always saves me in the teaching process. And just be open to new ideas and testing. And the way that I think it's a collaborative process is that you're not only testing it on yourself or testing your own teaching practices, you're asking your fellow teachers at your studio, what do you do to help with this? And then you're also testing it out on the students and getting that instant feedback. I know very quickly if something's not working. So
yeah.
It's like, okay, next week we're going to try something different. And that's when you say to the class, okay, this is not going to work for everyone, but it might work for one person.
Yeah, that's totally fair. Absolutely. And on that note too, sorry, going back to the whole, you know, giving corrections and it's the wording that counts. Have you got any moments that spring to mind where, you know, you've come across some wording and used it? And I mean, I know that you've talked about this in your podcast, but you've sort of found it really worked for, like, say, I don't know, a certain percentage of the group, and then the other group were like, oh no, it's an awful correction, I don't like it. I don't know. Yeah,
I know what you're getting at. I think when I first started teaching, I found that a lot that was coming out of my mouth was what my teachers taught me, and it was just like regurgitating. And I actually think that there's some teachers that go on their whole lives teaching like that, just regurgitating what was said to them. Mm. And I think that as the years have gone by, I probably did that for about, if I'm honest, 3 to 4 years. And after that mark, I really tried to become my own teacher and to sort of come up with phrases. I love how like every teacher has a catchphrase, you know, like little phrases about things.
Yeah.
And so I've really tried to develop my own. And, you know, I had some students the other day going on about they were going to create a t-shirt with all my favorite words on it that I use in class. But I definitely have taken inspiration from past coaches and teachers that have been incredible. And I've really kept that, you know, little nuggets of gold that are still valuable and still resonate today. Like, but also I think with comments and corrections in class, there's two things. There's, and I don't know if I even mentioned this in that podcast episode, but it's really important to have some fun, like make sure it's light. A good example of that would be my old coach, Paul Boyd. He used to say when he did a chasse pas de bourrée with the legs a little bit wider and not on the correct angle, that it looks like you're wearing a dirty nappy. Mm-hmm. And every time I have said that, literally for 10 years, everybody in the class giggles, even if they've heard me say it literally for the last 10 years, 100 times. So I think, you know, lightheartedness goes a long way, making everybody laugh, and it also makes them not do it. So to avoid it, but also a really good compliment sandwich goes a long way. So every time I have a hard hitting correction or need to really drill something down, I have already said something lovely before, and I will finish with saying something lovely after. So constantly, because I think, and I definitely spoke about this in that episode. Yeah. I do think that everyone is very hypersensitive these days. I don't know whether that's because of the pandemic. I don't know whether that's because of just the world we live in. It's so fast paced. There's so much going on. Everyone has anxiety. You know, there's not a lot you can say without it really dramatically impacting someone. Everyone takes everything to heart. And so I think to sort of get the correction through, you have to really sandwich it between some compliments, which isn't a bad thing because there's always something to compliment about. Like there's always something lovely that the students are doing. So it's not hard.
Yeah, true, true.
That's it.
The dirty nappy one, I don't think I've heard that. But Jeanette Mulligan, I had some classes with her when I was dancing, and she used to talk about articulation of the metatarsals like licking ice cream from the floor. And she used to say, oh
I like that.
Flavor of ice cream are you having today? And I'm sort of like a bit of a sensory, like, yeah, like it's sort of a bit jarring sensory because you're like, oh, imagine licking ice cream off the floor. But then also this makes total sense. Like with my feet, I'm articulating my feet. So
oh, I really love that. I think I'm going to steal it. Thank you, Jeanette.
You should acknowledge her in the show notes.
Yeah, 100%.
Ballet for boys. Let's just completely flip topics. Yeah. Do you teach many boys? Where do you think ballet for boys is going? I mean, it's something that gets cycled around so many times. It still is, I think, at the community level, dance participation for boys is a lot lower than it is for girls or males and females, if we're being binary about it. But yeah, what are your thoughts? I don't know.
I have a few thoughts at the moment because I'm currently 20 weeks pregnant with a boy. Ooh. And what's interesting about that is seeing people's comments when they find out I'm having a boy.
Yeah.
And now if I was having a girl, everyone would be assuming that they would do ballet. Or, oh my gosh, you're going to have a little ballerina on your hands. Or, you know, I'd probably start receiving little ballet shoe gifts or little mini tutus. I think it's fabulous that I'm having a boy because I'm surrounded by so many girls. but people's responses are interesting. They'll either say, oh, well, Dan loves surfing, doesn't he? So how good, you've got a little surfer on your hands. Or they'll say, what a shame, like, you know, oh, or maybe he could do ballet. Would you let him do ballet? And that's the wording. Would you let him do ballet? Of course I would let him do ballet. And like my husband and I have discussed this and we've said if he wants to do ballet, he can do ballet. I mean, chances are he's going to be hanging around a studio quite a lot.
Yeah,
he's either going to be really into it or he's going to be like, absolutely not.
Yeah.
And so it's interesting because no one would sort of, I mean, I could be wrong, but no one I can imagine would say, would you let her do ballet? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I think society still has that stigma attached to boys doing ballet, that they're, you know, more feminine or, you know, or not necessarily heterosexual. And so I think there's some dads that have a real issue with it. And I think that just has to disappear. Like we're in 2023. Do you know what I mean? And it is funny, like I think it is slowly disappearing, the comments that I've had where it's like, oh, will you let him do ballet, or that, you know, he wouldn't do ballet at all, have come from an older generation, which is interesting. Whereas, you know, my husband and his friends, you know, have gone, oh, yeah, if he wants to do ballet, that's all right. You know, my husband would secretly love him to be a golfer and play golf with him. But, you know, and I mean, chances are he probably will. But
I mean, just do both as well. Like, you know, they're probably not mutually exclusive. That's the other thing that's wild. Exactly. You know,
he can do whatever he wants. He can do multiple activities, or not too many, you know, balance. But, you know, it's funny, like we have quite a few boys here and I love how supportive their parents are of their ballet endeavors. We have a really, I'll tell you a cute story about one of our students. So one of our little boys at GC Dance, he was watching at a parent watching day, his sister do her primary ballet class. And it was like in the middle of the year. So the students were looking like really sharp. They were ready for exam work. And so they were, you know, all filing in a line. They did their exercises. They all filed beautifully into the center. There was, you know, that middle of the year where there's just real structure to the class.
They're in a routine. It's
like little robots, little ballet robots, and in a good way. Anyway, this young man came up to me at the end of class and he said, hi, Miss Georgia. I'm, you know, Kelsey's brother, Colin, and I'm going to start ballet with you next term. And I was like, okay, Colin. And I was like, that's fine. And then he literally just walked out. His mum came up to me and said, he was just mesmerized by the whole thing. Yep. He's always wanted to be in the army.
Right.
And he watched the ballet class and how structured and routine it was. And he was like, this is like being in the army. I need to do this. And it was so funny because he has a little buzz cut, like if he was in the army. That is his. And so he is like one step in his eyes to being in the army because it's like discipline. And the cutest thing is that Colin's been a student of mine for so many years now, and he recently went for his very first audition for the Queensland Ballet Academy, and he got it.
Wow.
So,
going to be in the army?
Oh, you know what? I don't know. Who knows? He might still join the army. But, yeah, it's funny how boys – I always find boys' stories interesting about how they come to ballet.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I find that they're always very driven by external kind of goals. It's interesting. I've got a few adults that have come through the doors over the years, some men, and their goals are very different to the women, very different. Women come in and they're sort of like, you know, this is some me time, this is like, finding myself, landing in my own body. It's really intrinsic and really internal. I will have a male client come in and go, I was watching Black Swan and I want to learn how to do those triple pirouettes. And so yeah. I have to explain, or fouettés, and I have to explain that, well, we don't just do fouettés in class. We have to do a whole series of steps that lead up to that. You've also never done ballet in your life. So, you know, we'll might come to that down the track. Let's start with pliés. So they're very, very different goal orientated to females. I find it fascinating.
Yeah, you have a really good point there. I actually have been working out of a clinic in Brisbane that's owned by another physio who's big into powerlifting. And I've known him for a long time. And he said to me, I want to come to a ballet lesson with you. And I'm thinking, well, I don't actually take class super regularly anymore, but I'll happily go to a ballet class with you. And he said, yep, I really want to go because I really want to improve my hip flexibility so I can get right down in the bottom of my deadlifts for my said, okay, sure. And then actually, because he was going, my husband said to me, oh, well, if he's going, I want to go with you too, you know, as a bit of a competitive sort of, I want to go as well, if he's going to go, you know. And the two of them in this class, I had to really, really have an intrinsic moment, have an intrinsic experience and just focus on myself, because I would have just been on the floor in stitches. But they gave it such a good go. And their observations after the class were really different to what I thought they would be as well. Like they were saying, it was so hard to stand on one leg for so long. And I just thought, wow, okay, yeah, true. I'd never ever thought that that would be your observation. And one of the things my husband said, I hope he forgives me for putting this in the podcast, but he said, how come all those ladies can do a pirouette, but I can't do a pirouette? And I just sort of thought, oh, well, you know, they've probably been going for quite a while, you know, that was your first lesson. Like it's...
Yeah, they're really like, I want a different word, but they're very cocky at their first lesson. And like males are just like, well, I can do that. And then they realize they can't do it. And then they get very frustrated.
Yeah. Yeah. So maybe it is about, yeah, when we're trying to attract males to dance, that we need to think about those extrinsic motivators, make it more competitive or something. Yeah. And the language. Absolutely. All right. I know that we're running out of time, because you have to go and teach soon. So I might finish off with my favorite question, the question that I ask everyone, but what is your favorite pair of, or your preferred pair of point shoes?
I love it. And it's funny, like people think I'm always going to answer with like a pair of point shoes, especially because I was blessed with really nice feet. And so you would think that I would be like going for a really like fancy Russian pair that, you know, I don't wear in too quickly or something, that make my feet work really hard. I was like really into ease as a young dancer, and I loved a good Gainamendin point shoe. I love extra spring from it. I loved that, you know, they lasted me ages, so I didn't have to sew the ribbons on them 100 times. The only time I really changed was when I was at Aussie Ballet School, and Mom, what happened was, I don't even know if they do this anymore, but we had access to the company's point shoe closet.
Yeah.
And if we could find a pair that fitted us, but, you know, they weren't going to make them for us like they do the company members. We had to find a pair, you know, a specific company member that we were their exact size, we loved their shoe, we could have them for $30.
Yeah.
Which was a very, very good price.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I think they still do that. But I was going to say, yeah, I was like, oh, did ABS let you wear Gainamendins? But anyway, there's more to the story.
No, they actually did let me wear them. But the thing was, my mum, because they're expensive, even back, like, I think they were still over $200 a pair. And my mum said to me, you make sure that you fit a pair of those shoes in that point shoe closet. Oh. Obviously with love, but I was, and obviously with, if I didn't, of course she was going to keep buying me point shoes, but I was like, I'm going to find a pair. And it just so happened that I ended up in the same pair that Lucinda Dunn had, and she was my idol. So all my point shoes growing up during that time had Dunn written on them, D-U-N-N.
What an inspiration though, just even on those tough days, just, Lucinda Dunn's shoes, you know.
I know. And I didn't even, it's funny though, I didn't even keep any of them either. It's so funny. When I left Aussie Ballet, I left everything in my locker, everything there, even my tutu. But yeah, I would have loved to have still had some of those shoes. But yeah, so block, not even a specific make, because they were Lucinda Dunn's make. And loved myself some Gainamendins. Yeah.
And you went to Paris recently and tried some point shoes there?
I did. So I went to Repetto. Oh my gosh, that place is divine. I think I spent almost 3 hours in that store. My sister loved it for the first hour and a half, and then she was like, okay, time to go. And I dragged her through that store up and down. I tried on, I'm trying to remember, what they're called. I can't remember, Louise. It's off the top of my, on the tip of my tongue. That's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
But they've got really beautiful girly names for all their point shoes. And the best thing was, the pair that I purchased have the ribbons already sewn on.
That's a bit of a quick
It's a good sell.
That's tempting. That is, isn't it?
So you still had to sew your elastics on, but the ribbons were in, and they were in a good spot. I'll be honest. They weren't in, you know, sometimes when a point shoe has the ribbon sewn in the wrong spot.
Yeah.
These were in a really good spot, at least for me. So I was like, sold.
Yeah. Sounds great.
Mind you, they're still sitting in the box. Haven't had a chance to put them on. I'm feeling a bit heavy these days. I don't know whether I could get up onto my point shoes.
I've recently just started putting point shoes back on again to do a little bit of teaching, and it definitely took a little bit of no, you just need to keep putting them on. Like, the more frequently you can put them on, the more you get used to them, isn't it? Like, you'll get used to losing the feelings in your toes.
I always tell my students to just walk around the house in them.
Yes. Yep. Yeah.
Walk around the house.
Yep. Absolutely. Yeah. Yes, it's a sensation that's no other. Yeah. And with that, I'll say thank you so much for your time and for what a really interesting interview. We covered so many bases, but I'm really, really cool. Thanks so much, Georgia. And
you're a great interviewer, and thanks so much, and congratulations on the podcast.
Thank you. Thank you for inspiring me and so many others. And I'll let you go and inspire your next class of students. We'll be right back.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.